From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we move on into this this great new year of 2021. And I know with the pandemic still going on, but there's hope out there that people are starting to get vaccinated. And a lot of talk of our Catholic schools are already back in session, have been in session all this academic year, which is just a miracle in itself, and a lot of great hard work on the part of our teachers and principals and et cetera. So we're just really, really, really pleased with that. And just so many good. I'm very optimistic about the new year. I'm fond of telling my family, God has not left the building. God has not left us alone. We're gonna get through this, and everything. Our faith will sustain us, and I've said to my family many times, not just during this past year, which has been difficult for a lot of people and very tragic for a lot of people, where would we be without our great faith, without our Catholic faith? Where would we be? It sustains us, and it's not why we believe, because it's good for us. We believe because it's true, you know. And there's a difference, you know. People say, well, it's nice to have something to hang on to, something to believe in. If that works for you, that's fine. No, it works for us because it's true, and and the evidence of that is all around us. The evidence of God is all around us, and the truth of our Catholic faith is all around us. And that's why, you know, we are hopeful people, we're prayerful people, and we're thankful people. And it's been a tough year, tougher for some than for others, but we are full of hope as we face the new year. Now, just having come off Martin Luther King Day, the head of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, Bishop Gomez, had a wonderful piece in Catholic News Service about Martin Luther King, and I'll just share some of it with you. In the spirit of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., we must meet the forces of hate and ignorance with the power of love, according to Los Angeles Archbishop Jose Gomez, who is the head of the U.S. Conference Catholic, the president of the U.S. Catholic, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, the USCCB. He says, this year, as we commemorate the legacy of this great American, we remember especially Reverend King's belief in nonviolence and the power of love. Reverend King, of course, was assassinated in 1968 in April. He was only 39 years old. There's a very good chance he would have been alive today. His actual birthday, January 15th. He would be 92. Would have been 92 years old. But as a federal holiday, it's observed on the third Monday of January each year. Archbishop Gomez goes on to say, for much of the past year, America has been reckoning with the legacy of slavery and the persistence of racial injustice in our country. Sadly, it is still true that the color of our skin often matters more in our society than the content of our character. He's quoting, obviously, the words of Reverend King from 50 years ago. Violent protests over the summer and the violence that took place inside the U.S. Capitol on January 6th show, quote, our country has become too angry, too bitter, and too divided, Archbishop Gomez said. Quote, as we confront our deep divisions, we face the same choices that Reverend King and the civil rights movement faced for us, too. The question is, how will we struggle against the injustices in our society? What means will we use? The challenge for every one of us believes in the promise of America and seeks to renew the soul of this great nation. That can be found in what Reverend King wrote as long ago as 1958, 63 years ago. Along the way of life, someone must have the sense enough and the morality enough to cut off the chain of hate. This can only be done by projecting the ethics of love to the center of our lives. Archbishop Gomez added, we must learn again the wisdom of the gospel and love our enemies and bless those who oppose us. In this moment, Reverend King would counsel everyone in public life to seek reconciliation and reject the easy temptation to reprisals and recrimination. Archbishop Gomez goes on to say, we do not love those who oppose us because they are lovable or even likable, Reverend King once said. We love them because God loves them. And by our love, we seek their conversion and friendship, not their humiliation. This is our Christian duty in this moment, to be healers and peacemakers, to overcome evil and lies, not by more of the same, but with words of truth and works of love. Archbishop Gomez concluded by asking Mary, the Queen of Peace, quote, to guide us in this moment of transition and uncertainty in our country. May she help us keep believing in the power of love. The new bishop, newly installed bishop of Buffalo, New York, Bishop Michael Fisher, said, on the day when all lovers of peace honor Reverend King's memory and legacy, let us recommit ourselves to cherishing and promoting the dignity of every person, to defeating what Pope Francis defines as the sin of racism, whether in mind or in action, and however blatant or subtle, and to demonstrating in these days of conflict and tension the desire for dialogue, understanding, and mutual respect. Quoting Reverend King, Bishop Fisher added, people fail to get along because they fear each other. They fear each other because they don't know each other. They do not know each other because they have not communicated with each other. The bishop prayed that civil rights leaders' memory, that Reverend King's memory, will inspire us always and in every place to discern the good in others and, by our actions, reveal the grace and goodness of God himself. Alveda King, the niece of Reverend King, who's been a guest on this show a number of times, who is founder of the Alveda King Ministries, issued a statement reiterating her uncle's words about love. He said he would stick with love because hate is too great a burden to bear. She urged people to remember the King holiday should be a day of service. We can all find something constructive to do in our communities, even if it's just shaking the hand of the neighbor who supported a different candidate. Anything we can do to increase the peace is more than worth our efforts. When we learn to value the human personality and understand that we are one blood and one human race, we can learn to live together as brothers and sisters, and we won't perish as fools, she added. So, yeah, great words from so many of our church leaders, so many of our religious leaders, and that those words about Reverend King's words, that hate is too great a burden to bear, is really true. And the Catholic Church is working very hard, you know, open wide our hearts to really deal with racism in our society, racism in our country, and to overcome it and to see it for what it is. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we will be joined by Ned DeLessie, the exec director of the California Catholic Conference, and this was an interview that we pre-recorded on the Martin Luther King Day on Monday. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
Hi, this is Laura Lynn, Assistant Director for Lay Formation, and you are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Laura Lynn, for all the great work you do here for our wonderful Catholic faith in the Diocese of Sacramento. Appreciate everyone who has is listening to the Bishop's Hour and all those underwriters who have supported us over these many years of the Bishop's Hour, and greatly appreciate that, and especially appreciate our listeners and a lot of our great guests. Speaking of which, we're pleased and honored to welcome in Ned DeLessi, Executive Director of the California Catholic Conference, which represents all the bishops of the state of California. Ned, good day to you.
Good. Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, indeed. I think it is afternoon.
I think it finally is. Yes, that's true. Nowadays, it's hard to tell.
It is hard. It's definitely hard to tell. So much happening in our world, obviously, Ned. And we should explain, Ned, for years, was the executive director of the California Catholic Conference and then retired at a very young age and is now back. Is it on an interim basis or is it on a permanent basis?
No, this is definitely totally interim.
Totally interim. Does that have a capital I, interim?
It has on the letterhead that I sent.
Does it? Okay. indeed. But it takes a while, obviously, to get, even though you were up to speed and remained very active, it takes a while to get up to speed with new faces, new issues.
Yes, time takes its toll, and COVID certainly has, taken a toll on a number of different issues and thoughts, but it's California, so a lot of the same themes continue, and, we have to understand that, and, I am trying to understand some of the new faces, some of which have moved to different, different house, but,
right.
And it's a new administration, and so new faces in there, so yes, it's been a learning curve, shall we say.
And you explain, if you would, our term limits in California, both for the Assembly and the Senate.
Well, if I recall correctly with my elderly mind, you get three sessions as an assembly member.
Those are two-year sessions.
Those are two-year sessions and two sessions as a senator, which are four-year sessions.
Right.
And so we do have people who move from one to the other.
And you put those all together, it could be 14 years.
That's correct, which is certainly a substantial change from what used to be.
Right.
You could be there forever.
And many people don't understand, but the U.S. Congress, both the House and the Senate, have no term limits. And the only way you could institute term limits there would be through a constitutional amendment, which would be very unlikely.
Very, very unlikely right at the moment. And, it's a mixed bag. Obviously, there's an argument to be made for term limits in the sense that, people perhaps, lose their energy, lose their enthusiasm, perhaps have been around too long and amassed too much influence or control for what should amount to a very vibrant democracy. On the other hand, there's the fact that, when we did term limits, we lost people who had invested their time and energy in particular issues. So if someone was really focused on agriculture, they could be on the Agricultural Commission. And, after 6, 8, 10 years in there, they knew the issues. They knew them very well. They knew them upside down and inside out, and they had staff people who did the same. Now, with term limits, they rely more on staff, but even more so on lobbyists, who don't have term limits. And mm-hmm. so they, a lot of the institutional memory has shifted to the lobbying core, shall we say.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I've always sort of been in favor of term limits for everybody except in my district, where I want to vote for the best guy or gal, and it may be somebody that's been in office for 20 years. But if I don't like the person that's been in office, I think he should be term limited.
It is that mixed bag, and as I say, you can make arguments both ways. California has fared fairly well, I think, with term limits, and it's addressed one of the challenging concerns, which was equity and racial disparity and gender disparity initially. Over the course of time, if people are in there forever, it's hard to get them out. And it started out as a substantially male operation, and now there's certainly much more female representation across the spectrum. And much more diversity. We now have a very large Hispanic caucus. We have a large Asian caucus, not as large of a Black caucus at the moment, but still present and represented. And so, it's allowed that transition to take place over these last 20 years.
I think you make a good point, though, Ned, about institutional memory. A lot of these committees, a lot of the legislation is technical, and frequently not especially partisan, you do need people on the Agricultural Committee and medical committees and things like that where a baby really know their stuff, if you will.
Well, that's correct. And much of it, more than half, up to two-thirds of the legislation is technical aspects of industries and government and, public policy issues that deal with, policing, et cetera, and things like that. And to remember, we tried that back when, or, this nuance is this, or we really need to talk to these people, that's significantly important. And it plays itself out in the budget reality, too, the allocation of funds. So we spent money on that, 15 years ago, and it didn't work.
Didn't work, yeah.
So let's not try it again. So those kind of things, they do have an importance, and thank God we do have the history that you can access if people choose to do so. So it's been an interesting dynamic, and I'm interested in meeting some of the new members, particularly the leadership, where they're in different committee roles and things like that. But by and large, that's what our lobbyists do. They continue that relationship with people.
So speaking of money, a little over a year ago, California had a huge budget surplus, and then COVID hit, and suddenly we got a huge deficit, and now the headlines are saying we're awash in money again. Is that true?
That is true. As best I can understand from reading the material, California has know, we have both an income tax and capital gains tax, et cetera, and property tax and things like that. And so, you know, it reflects the growing economic disparity, which has been heightened by the COVID reality. The stock market has done extremely well in this last year after the March downturn. It's done extremely well. And, you know, those of us with means have done all right. And those who have lots of means have done very well. And California has taxes that assess those profits. And
right.
Those taxes are rather lucrative right at the moment. So, yes, we have a surplus. It's an interesting dynamic that the proposal by President-elect Biden, you know, for the COVID relief gives money to states and counties in some regards. And, you know, and California needed that money a year ago. Now it's a question of whether we really need it.
Right.
You know, that's not to say the special allotments for private schools, for public education, those things are needed. But, you know, do we need general funds and do we need, you know, this, that, and the other thing? That's certainly a difficult political question that we're going to be addressing in the months ahead.
So of the California state budget, which I know that, you know, the conference follows closely because we have a lot of things that we're interested in, a lot of issues we're interested in. And, of course, the preferential option for the poor. Of a California state budget, how much of that money comes from the federal government generally?
Well, you put me on the spot there. I don't know what the, you know, current percentage is. It's not a substantial portion like going mm-hmm. over 50% or 60% mm-hmm. or something like that. But it is a percentage of the budget, much of which comes for for our Medi-Cal. Much of which comes for our social programs for those who are poor and struggling and that type of thing, but I don't have that percentage with me, so I don't want to venture a comment there, Bob.
Ned, do some of the things that you advocate for, the conference advocates for, to the legislature, when you get a well maybe or no, that's probably not going to happen. How many times is that because of we don't have the funds for that? And how many times is it just because, you know, we don't believe in that?
Well, it's circumstantial. Again, a difficult, you know, thing on different issues. You can pick a particular issue like CalFresh, which is, mm-hmm. Food stamps. And,
right.
And we don't use the percentage that we should, you know, for the people who are eligible in California. And so our Catholic Charities and others are out there trying to change some of the rules and that type of thing. The funding has been coming, but a number of years ago, the funding wasn't coming.
Right.
So, you know, so it, there's a baseline, and then there's the added need that we seek and look for, and sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not. It reflects the priorities of the political moment that we're in. You know, how much are we going to spend on covered California, and how much are we going to spend on Medi-Cal, because the state does put up money for Medi-Cal, and mm-hmm. And then there's the public funding of abortions in Medi-Cal, which the federal government does not do at the present time. So that involves how much the state wants to spend on that, and we'd like them not to spend anything on that.
Right.
It's a mixed bag.
There is no federal money for abortion, but California is spending state money for abortion.
That is correct.
Right.
That is correct, yeah. They spend the state money for abortion, and we're one of the states who chooses to do that, and, hence the, sorry, don't get me started on that.
No, I know. Yeah,
particularly in this week when we're going to have, Respect Life Day and,
right.
And the larger virtual March for Life and Walk for Life, and we're going to be gathered to, to have our prayer and our reflections on the society, and it's addressing the question of abortion and life. So I'm sure, and it will be a concern now, particularly that President-elect Biden has decided to switch his position on the Hyde Amendment.
Yeah,
that would be a funding issue that the federal government will probably wrap that into the budget. I would guess in the fall would be how I would expect them to approach it.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, and we've had the Hyde Amendment for a long time. And
bipartisan support.
With bipartisan support, absolutely. Absolutely.
And President-elect Biden being one of those bipartisan people who decided to change his mind, which is very sad.
Yeah. So,
it's an interesting week, as you know. I mean, you know, with Martin Luther King Week, Martin Luther King Day, and with the inauguration, and with the Respect Life coming up, it's just, and it's also the week for the prayer for Christian unity.
Yes, so, yeah. There is
a few things for us to keep in mind as people of faith.
I felt as if Martin Luther King Day almost got overlooked this year, even with all the events dealing with racial justice that happened during the previous year, with the inauguration and all the election and all that, and like you say, and now we're in the midst of participating in the novena for pro-life, started on the 14th and runs through the 22nd, the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. Also, I should remind everybody there will be a special pro-life mass celebrated by Bishop Soto at the cathedral on Friday, the 22nd, 12:10 p.m., and it will be live streamed. So everybody can participate, and we're urged to participate in a lot of pro-life events. Unfortunately, the March for Life in D.C. was just straight out canceled, but so much going on in D.C. that I'm sure that was very prudent. And the Walk for Life, the last I've heard, their last communique was they'd canceled the rally portion of it, but we're still going to walk in San Francisco. But our diocese has come up with a number of great pro-life events here in the diocese.
Yes, and a wonderful time to step up, particularly during this inauguration week. I mean, we are seeing a transition from one party to the other,
right,
and that will have its impact on many issues that impact life, and so it's time for us as faithful disciples both to pray and to engage.
And to let all of our elected representatives, whether they're in Washington, D.C. or here in California, let them know how we feel about these issues.
Please, yes, by all means, we can't put our head in the sand. We have to stay engaged both prayerfully and faithfully.
So what do we know about Governor Newsom's budget?
Everybody's in the midst of studying that right now and deciding, the biggest concerns have been focused around COVID, of course,
mm-hmm.
and certainly, schools, the public schools, and there's some challenge and controversy around that. The governor is proposing $2 billion. As I've heard, that part of that $2 billion, much of that $2 billion comes out of the Prop 98 funds, which are already earmarked for education. And so the advocates for education would like to see even more than that. And so that's been a debate that continues to move on. And the governor has invited the teachers to move, up in the line to get vaccinated as quickly as they can so that they could open the schools in February. And now it will come down to each school district making those determinations based on, their own medical and social and political realities. And so that's in play right now. There's funding there to enhance the distribution of the vaccine, which we definitely need to do because we have not done a good job of that as a state right now.
Right.
And we need to step up and get that done and make it happen. And there's some funding in there for that. I was looking at the funding for immigration, and there's not much new there at the moment. So we'll be looking at that in some detail. There's some funding for different aspects of healthcare, which I'm sure our healthcare brothers and sisters will be sorting through and giving us some advice as to where to move. There's a variety of things to deal with those who are struggling and poor in the state right at the moment. It's being researched, as we say right now.
Mm-hmm.
Legislature will engage it. The legislature will start engaging it now. I think as soon as we're past the inauguration, they've already had the organizing budget committee hearings, and those will begin virtually. And so the governor will be in explaining, and the legislators will be questioning, and those of us will be deciding which positions to take.
There's even some hint that the governor could elect to, well, or the legislature, to rebate some of this money.
That is something that they've talked about. Yes, the governor, wants to assist people, particularly those who are working, with some direct subsidies back to the governor. There's some questions of, some tax reform kind of things, or at least tax abatement issues. And again, the complexity of it sort of boggles your mind. And if you'd like at a future meeting, I can sit down and run through a number of those, but I don't want to misspeak at the moment.
Yeah, I remember reading about it, and after about the second paragraph, it got very complicated. It was,
yes,
like, I thought
your eyes glaze over.
Yeah, exactly. I thought for me, I thought, honey, we're gonna get a big check from the governor, and then I'm gonna read, and it's gonna do this and do that, and maybe this, and it's like, oh, I don't know who's gonna get anything.
Yeah, maybe not. But there's an urgency for them to address it, and the governor has asked them to deal with it. So I would expect within the month, the legislature is proposing back, and we're in a serious dialogue about what would go into effect. Obviously, if they want to go into effect immediately, they have to pass emergency authorization. Mm-hmm. They can't let the usual constitutional aspects run. So, yeah, it's going to be the primary debate that will engage the legislature. They're certainly introducing all sorts of bills, but most of them are what we call spot bills. They are just a concept that someone is floating around a particular topic or issue, and there's not much substance to it. And so they're introducing spot bills all over the place with things that they're thinking about doing in a variety of areas. That will take place for another month or so, and then the legislature will start dealing with those. But all the urgency right now is around the budget.
If the bishops of California had a wish list, if there was enough money and political will, what would be at the top of that wish list?
Well, I think certainly dealing with those people, as you mentioned earlier, those who are vulnerable, those who are struggling, mm-hmm. What can we do to alleviate their challenges and their suffering? I mentioned, CalFresh and the food stamps issue is certainly right out there. I think to provide some subsidy for particularly those essential workers who have been either working overtime or whatever, mm-hmm. if we can assist their businesses, I think, to assist those people who have lost their jobs in this time frame. And, the federal government is looking at that, and the state government has opportunities there. The earned income tax credit, extending that, as is proposed to undocumented folks who have a tax number, I think would help also in stabilizing some family realities. Certainly businesses, the small businesses that have been most impacted by this COVID, if there's some way to assist them with subsidies or tax rebates and things like that, from the state level, I think we would like to see that happening. And then healthcare, we do need to fund the vaccination distribution, and we need to fund healthcare for everyone that we can possibly. Who's struggling right now to find health care. We need to make sure we're doing everything we can to keep people healthy and safe.
Covered California, does it truly cover everybody who doesn't have it through their work or just doesn't have it?
Well, it's a series of plans. It keeps going through assignments. If you're not working or you're on disability, or you're just too poor. Medi-Cal is what people qualify for,
mm-hmm.
and that's not Covered California. Covered California is a series of plans that subsidize health care for those people who are not offered health care in their work environment,
mm-hmm.
or whose family doesn't qualify currently or whatever, and so. So there's a number of plans that Covered California offers with different levels of subsidy and different levels of coverage. And, it's a, you know, it's been a very positive and effective plan, and something that we need to continue. You know, we need to continue doing and continue funding, and it may be even more challenging for people to meet some of those subsidy levels now in this COVID reality.
And that's part of the Affordable Care Act.
That is California's version of the Affordable Care Act.
Right, and each state had a different version with many similarities, but each, it was done on a state-by-state basis.
Correct, and ours is called Covered California, just as we call Medicaid.
Right.
Because California is a significant portion of that. So we haven't decided what to call Medicare other than Medicare. So.
You know, yeah, that's right. Over the years, we've had, you know, it seems like every year we end up with a hot issue or two, aside from the budget, which is always sort of kind of one of the prime focuses. Because it funds everything, do you see any major issues out there that are likely? Somebody's just itching to maybe a new legislator or to get out there in the public arena.
Well, you know, I don't know whether I should bring it up because it might be a wish that I don't want to come true. We have a rumor that there may be legislation surrounding the assisted suicide law in California, and that would be sad indeed.
In what way?
Well, as you know, as I hope some of our readers know from our earlier conversations, the assisted suicide law in California sunsets in 2026.
Right.
And there are people who would like to make it permanent and not have it sunset. And there are those of us who are working between now and then to make sure it would sunset because there wouldn't be a need for it. But, there's also been talk, and other states have introduced legislation which may be mirrored here to make it possible for dementia patients to access the, which boggles the mind also.
It does.
Particularly if this is supposed to be a free and fair choice. There's been interest in extending the 6-month period so that if someone feels like they're in pain or their potential for pain or they're suffering or whatever is broader than that 6-month period, that they would be able to step forward and do that. And there's been talk of people expanding it to chronic illnesses, which aren't necessarily life-threatening but are chronic.
Right.
You know, and it's just the normal expansion that we've seen in Europe and elsewhere that continues to fester here in our conversation, in our discussion. So I don't know which or what of those would come to fruition, but I think I expect that to potentially be an issue that's out there. Mm-hmm. I think there's always some issue that those who are very much pro-abortion will try and expand the funding or the right take away a particular experience. I think we're going to see some legislation around what's called gender dysphoria.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the folks who usually do the lobbying for issues that support gay and lesbian issues, have broadened their agenda to the transgender issues and how that society should approach that, and that's always an issue that we need to look at to find out how we respect the dignity of the human person and at the same time, understand the compassion necessary to deal with people who are challenged. So I would expect those to be there. I think there'll be continued conversation around the role of parents in education and how to move forward in that, and so we're looking at that. I'm expecting that there will be legislation around the expansion of early childhood education, and we want all early childhood education. We want children to get the opportunity for early childhood education, but we want to respect the diversity of how that early childhood education is provided. So we'll be working that issue for sure. There'll be the usual issues around immigration and immigration funding and how to assist our folks both in the state and federally. So, I don't know, that's a beginning list. I mentioned CalFresh already and a few of those issues that we're looking at also. But until the budget proposals are out there and the legislation becomes a little clearer what people want to do, we're in the assessment process right at the moment.
Boy, there's a lot of vegetables in that pot. I'm telling you,
there are. As I started out, Bob, it's California.
Yes, that's right. So with immigration, immigration, we think of it primarily a federal issue. What immigration issues are there within the state that the state government or state budget would have control over?
Assisting immigrants, certainly we provide some assistance for emergency kind of relief and different things like that with our Catholic Charities and other groups in dioceses across the state. I think the biggest piece of it is the legal services to assist immigrants in clarifying their status and in moving towards citizenship or legal status here in America. And so, we work on that in our diocese, primarily through our Catholic Charities and with other partners also. So those are the primary ones that jump to mind at the moment.
Well, Ned, I'm... I'm glad you're the interim director and I'm not.
Well, I have a competent staff of people and some lobbyists to work on. I think I'm honored to have the opportunity to do this again for some time, but hopefully it will be, as we said, interim, and the bishops will begin their process to find who they wish to lead this particular operation. But in the meantime, we have to do what God calls us to do. We have to, find out what this moment is and how does Christ need to touch this, his hands and his feet and his heart, and how do we walk the journey with our brothers and sisters? How do we respect life and how do we seek that common good? And right now, I think, two issues that are uppermost, the bishops of California have had a task force on racism and
right.
Been marvelous to be such a privilege to be part of those dialogues and conversations. We really should get Bishop Soto in again to talk a little bit about what's going on in the diocese on that. That issue remains, with us. And then the healing, the healing that needs to take place in our extremely divided political world. But it's broader than political now. It seems to be a divided social world. And for disciples of Christ, this is a call and a moment to civility, to compassion, to listening, to presence. And this is my own editorial comment. Don't buy everybody's line from the right and the left.
Yeah. Yep.
We're talking a flawed reality here.
Yep.
And while they may be, hopefully, well intentioned and well meaning, there is not an abiding truth that rests in either particular approach.
And that is an abiding truth that you just said.
Yes, and we're disciples of the Lord. And
exactly.
That's what the truth is. And we have to work with people from both parties. We have to respect and care about each other. We have to listen with civility and dignity. We have to work hand in hand to seek solutions. But, we respect people. We don't want to get into the kind of divisions that lead to violence.
Yeah, it is. I just cannot recall a time, and you may differ, but I doubt it. Where it seems that we have been so divided, and in a with great hostility.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I can't. I lived, through the Vietnam War and the rest of that, and
we were
a divided nation, and there were experiences of violence that moved forward. We lived through the civil rights reality, and there was violence and hatred and things that that affected us then. And this seems to have captured the attention even more substantial than both of those moments.
Yeah. Yeah, it really has. Well, Ned, it's so good to talk with you, and we'll look forward to our paths crossing again soon. Hopefully, maybe even in person.
Yes, maybe even in person, and we can focus on one of the many issues we discussed today, and and help our readers and listeners, understand a little more in depth. But I would just say thank you for what you do, and thank you for the listeners who take their time to listen and keep themselves informed. And I just ask all of us, particularly this week, to turn and pray for the spirit of peace and some spirit of gratitude to come our way.
Yeah, indeed. Amen. Thanks so much, Ned. God bless.
All right. God bless.
Yeah, thank you. That's Ned DeLessi, Interim Executive Director of the California Catholic Conference, which represents all the bishops of the Diocese of Sacramento and deals with the legislature and legislators and the governor's office as well. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and long-standing support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
Good morning. This is Sister Maria, and I'm the Formation Director for the Seminarians, and you are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Sister Maria, for all you do in our great vocations office, and greatly appreciate that fine introduction. We should point out that the interview with Ned DeLessi was recorded on Martin Luther King Day on Monday, and I agree with Ned. We have to keep our eye on the prize, the good Lord, our Savior Jesus Christ, and don't get distracted by all the noise out there.
Good. Yeah, that's good advice for everybody all the time.
Gabe, you are a new father.
Yes, number three.
Well, I mean.
I'm not new.
How would you say that? You're not a new father, but you.
I'm a father again.
A father again. Yeah. A new father again. A father of a new child.
There you go.
There you go.
And there's nothing new about me. I'm very old and run down. I'm like an old Buick at this point. But yeah, I have a new kid.
That's great.
Thank you. Yeah, he's great.
A boy.
Yeah, his name's Eric. He's 4 pounds, or no, 4 pounds. Eight pounds, 3 ounces. Which is actually the runt of our litter. We had other two kids were much larger.
Yeah.
But, it happened 2 weeks ago. So, it's been fun.
And has he got any college scholarships yet?
Yes. Yeah. We're having a couple tours next week. Yeah. Mostly Ivy League. he seems smart. He already kind of knows how to grab for stuff. So,
obviously
a genius. I don't know. We'll see. It's funny. So far, out of the two, my son, who's a really big kid, has no interest in sports other than maybe soccer. And that's mostly because he just likes to run around. He's definitely the engineer in the family. My daughter is much like a battering ram. And I think if anyone's going to play football, it's going to be her. Yeah. I come home and I try to give her a high five and she hits her head into my hand.
Well, it's interesting because I was an average athlete, but very sports crazy, and then was a sports editor for a number of years and still cover sports, done a lot of sports on radio and TV, and taken my kids to a lot of games, and six kids. And the same thing, some played, the junior basketball and little league baseball and enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But not that single-minded passion that some of us who are sports nuts have, and I could be watching the Super Bowl and we'll take the Super Bowl and we'll have things with the kids we got to guess, which team's going to score the first touchdown? Right. And they all get into it. And we have a chart, and you get 50 points for that. And the kids, they have to agree. Okay, well, this team's going to score the first touchdown. How many times is the announcer going to say, holy cow? Just fun things.
Yeah.
How many Doritos commercials will there be? how many Clydesdales will we see? Right. And then they add up the points at the end. And, if you got 500 points, you get to go to your favorite ice cream parlor.
Oh, okay.
Okay. If you got 1,000 points, you get, all the way up to you get to go to Disneyland. Well, right now, the only thing you'd get at Disneyland is a vaccination, but unfortunately, they get into the Super Bowl.
It's a real small world after
football, but because of.
Yeah, that's cool.
My mom always said that when I started having children, grandchildren were God's gift for getting old.
Mm-hmm. My mom would agree.
Yeah, and she was just, I don't know what it is about being a grandparent, but boy, that's special stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And to see, if you're ever having a problem with a kid, if grandma said don't do that,
right?
And not in a stern way, not in a...
You just knew. Because grandma's on board with so much.
That's right.
Yeah. I think having being a grandparent is a lot like eating ice cream without gaining any weight.
Yeah.
Because, you've get to have the pleasure of all the stuff that you loved about being a parent, but none of the stress or the concern or worry. I mean, the grandparents worry about their grandkids, but... You also trust your children that have had these kids that they're going to know what they're doing, hopefully. So I think it's one of those things where you can just sit back and enjoy the idea of what kids bring to the table. And, if they want to make a mess, it's not your house probably,
Of course, in today's society, and we're seeing this a lot, where grandparents are the primary caretakers of their grandchildren.
Yeah. Yeah,
Sometimes it's because of broken families. Sometimes it's because both parents are working and the grandparents live in the area.
Sometimes it's actually a good situation though, where a lot of families will have like the grandparents who live at the home, and then they're the primary caregiver in a way where instead of having a nanny or have to go somewhere, your child gets to do it. And I think that's not the situation I have in my home, but my mom lives really close and. It's nice because, you get to have this interaction with your child, interact with this older generation. I think, unfortunately, a lot of kids...
somebody you really trust.
Yeah, for sure. That's always important. But I think there's also a lot of things where a lot of kids nowadays, unfortunately, don't have a connection with that older generation that you could learn so much from.
Yeah.
And so I feel very blessed that my kids have that with my mom and my wife's parents.
I found my mom and my dad. My mom outlived my dad by about 21 years, but so the grandkids knew my mom much better than my dad.
Right.
Some of the grandkids didn't know my dad at all, but there was that wisdom of the ages. I've seen this kind of stuff before, or I've seen this kind of stuff before. And in my day, it was this that people were crazy about. But that wisdom supersedes a lot of the wisdom that parents have.
Oh yeah.
But as as the catechism says, you, your wife, Julie, you're the primary educators of your kids.
Yep.
And It ultimately all falls on you. And it's amazing to me. I remember just with the first baby, but even the sixth baby, that instant love.
Oh, yeah.
Instant love, where you're ready to die for somebody that you just met. Your yeah. wife may have met him
right.
a few months ago, but you just met him.
And it's still strange because I come from a family of three, my brother and a sister, and we used to, you know, do, of course, the obligatory question, like, Mom, who do you love more? And she'd say, I love you all equally. It's so crazy to realize that that is legitimate now. Because, yeah. I mean, it's easy when it's two of them, yeah. but splitting a pie three ways, you're like, wow, I really do love you guys equally. and it doesn't diminish from one to the other.
It crosses your mind, and it has nothing to do with if one is excelling in school or one is struggling.
Right.
Or
I mean, one might be getting on my nerves more than the
yeah,
other.
We'll give it true. Yeah. That's true. But you do. You love them equally, and you never even cross your mind
right.
that you wouldn't love them equally. And,
right.
and that's a gift from God. And I guess maybe the species couldn't have survived if that wasn't the case. But it is amazing to see instant, unconditional love.
Yep.
And it's unconditional.
Our capacity for loving something is pretty astounding.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very astounding. I'm blown away by it all the time. I see my son in the morning, like, you know, wake up and there he is, and it's just like, wow, I really, really love him.
Yeah.
And I barely know him.
And I barely know him.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's it's a great, it's fun, and it's one of those things where it's just you know, it's weird because with the way things have been going with hospitals, I wasn't able to go to the doctor appointments this time all throughout right. the pregnancy like I did with my other two. I went to every doctor appointment, all that kind of stuff. I wasn't able to this time, so it was such a strange anticipatory situation for me, because when the night happened for the birth, it was like, okay, like, this is, other than seeing a FaceTime video from inside the doctor's office of the heartbeat for the first time, this is my first real interaction with him, mm-hmm. other than, you know, being yeah. next to him, and it was weirdly overwhelming in a different way than it was for the other two, because it was like, oh, okay, here you are. You know, it was weird.
You know, this is a conversation I wish that anybody anticipating an abortion would just
yeah.
would go, wow.
Yeah.
There are two guys, they're really into having a kid.
Yeah.
You know, like, what am I missing here?
Right. It's funny, too, because I guess so many people have such low expectations for a lot of guys when it comes to that kind of thing. People will go, hey, so you had a baby. And I'm like, well, my wife did, as a joke.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
People go, no, you're involved. I'm like, no, I get yeah. it. I am involved. I'm just kidding. Like, I know.
We've seen the billboards featuring men.
Right.
The pro-life billboards saying, to be responsible. Do the responsible thing.
Right.
And I'm going, yeah, I agree with that, obviously. But let's emphasize the joy of being a dad.
Right. Yeah, they make it sound like a burden.
Yeah, it's not
like all right, you're here now.
I'm going to be responsible. Well, of course you're going to be responsible. But if you're in love with that child, this being responsible just comes automatically.
Yeah, the responsibility is. Yeah, like, I mean, that's not even like,
you don't need to tell me to put him in a car seat. I'm going to put him in
a car
seat.
Well, it's funny. My wife will do that every once in a while. It's like, even still, I mean, I was a stay-at-home dad other than this job for both my other kids. And it's one of those things where she'll go, hey, make sure you don't fall asleep with them when you're. I'm like, you know, I know how not to kill my kid, right?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
I know yeah. how to say it. I know what I'm doing. She goes, I know. It's just one of those weird mom things where you have to say yeah. it. And it's like, no, I get it. But my instinct for protecting my children is extremely high. Yeah. And it's not because I feel like I have to. It's my obligations, because I love them so much. And I feel like I wish more people would understand that love starts long before they're born.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's God's gift. And it's wonderful, and we're pleased for you, Gabe, and we're praying for you and your family. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless.
I was sure by now, God, you would have reached down and wiped our tears away, stepped in and saved the day. But once again, I say amen, and it's still raining. But as the thunder rolls, away.